Hey, you're listening to the Jason Kurtman Show. Back at you this week. I've been gone all week. Been in San Antonio, Texas, home of the Alamo and the infamous Riverwalk. It was fantastic. I had a great time, but I am so glad to be back home. With me in the studio, with me today, is my good friend. You probably remember him, Mr. Derek Heisey. How are you doing this evening, Derek?
Doing pretty good, Jason. How about you?
I'm still suffering from a little bit of jet lag. And saddle sores, I guess. Those airplane seats, I'm telling you what. We get stuck on the tarmac, I was telling you earlier, for about 2.5 hours. And, of course, I was headed out for some training and facilitation. And I didn't really want to go at first. So while I'm sitting there, the captain, we'd been sitting for about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And the captain came on the loudspeaker and said, "We just got word it may be another 2 hours. They're having some bad weather in Dallas. And if you'd like to get off the plane, now would be a good time to do that." I thought, fantastic. I'm going to call my boss and let him know what's going on and kind of get his approval for me to get off this plane. So I called my boss on the phone. About halfway through my first sentence, the captain came on and said, "Good news, folks. We just got clearance to take off." So I was in it for the long haul. I went out to San Antonio. I had a great time. I learned a lot. And I got to go down and visit the Riverwalk. Being the history buff that I am, I really wanted to see the Alamo. And I did. I got to see the back door of it. Did not get to go around to the front. It was late. We had to get back to for some more training, more homework, so to speak. And as we were leaving the Riverwalk, one of the ladies in our vehicle said, "There's the Alamo." And all I saw was a stone wall that went around the back of it, a little gate. And I thought, well, I will come back.
Well, I mean, so long as no one asks any questions, you can still get some history buff credit by just saying, "Yeah, I saw the Alamo.
I've been there. I've been to the Alamo.
I've been to the Alamo."
I
mean,
I remember being at the Alamo.
Even though it was just the back door, I still remember.
Yes,
it.
Absolutely. But we had a good time, and I'm so glad to get back on the show tonight. And I'll tell you what, we're going to do something. I've got a CD here, Johnny Lee Cook, Faith, Hope, and Laughter. It's a comedy CD. If you'd like to receive that CD, give us a call tonight at 575-437-0917, 575-437-0917. We'll copy down your address and other information, and I'll make sure that you get that CD. Johnny Lee Cook, Faith, Hope, and Laughter. It's been a great week. It's going to be a great day tomorrow. I get to go back to work tomorrow.
That makes it wonderful, right?
It does. It does. As two frogs said, time's fun when you're having flies, right? So got to spend some good time with my family. When I get back, you know, my oldest son, he's 20 years old. Me and Hank Stuckey last week talked about barbecuing and grilling. And my boy tonight is cooking some ribeye, some sirloin, and some chicken and beef sirloin shish kebabs. And he is really good. Speaking of cooking, I had an interesting experience this week. I had sushi for the very first time.
How was that, Jason?
I'm glad I didn't think about it before I went there. Okay, you know me, Derek. I like to try new things.
Yeah.
That's what life's about. If you don't try new things, then your life's not as interesting to you. To me, it's not. If I'm doing the same thing over and over and over, what fun is that?
Precisely. It's a series of new experiences, so you got to have as many new experiences
right.
as you can.
But it'd be a lot like, for me, picking up a rattlesnake. If I'd have thought about it first, I wouldn't have done it.
Maybe I haven't made the best choices in my life. I mean, clearly, I
sushi's not one of them, though,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, sushi. I tell you, there was two types of sushi that I ate there, and they call it sushi, although technically, I guess it's not. There is a cooked form of the same dish.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of interesting. Sushi itself only refers to the rice.
To the rice, and there's another word, sashimi. Is that it?
I don't know.
That actually refers to the raw fish. And from what I understand, the only fish you can use is saltwater fish, tuna, bluefin.
Yeah, you can get freshwater fish, to my understanding, but it has to be cooked. Well, not cooked, but it has to be cut in only certain places. I know that for the more exotic sushis, you have to go to a chef who knows what he's doing, because especially for like blowfish, even though it's not technically freshwater, for like blowfish, they can only cut certain parts of it, and they can only cut it a certain way, or else the food itself becomes toxic.
Now there's certain chefs in Japan, they have to go through a certification process to prepare that.
Correct, yeah, because it can be so dangerous.
I'm also told that the emperor of Japan traditionally has been prohibited from eating those dishes.
Probably because it is so dangerous.
Wikipedia, that's where I got that from. I don't research.
Honestly, like, because I was born in the internet age, I've always had one foot stuck in the internet. I don't know what I would do without Wikipedia. That is any student's saving grace.
It really is. But you got to be careful because you can be nailed for plagiarism too.
Well,
if you don't.
And you also have to be careful to make sure that you get the right, you know, you don't just copy what some guy decided, oh, I'm just going to put this in the Wikipedia article, make it sound like it's official, but it's not. So right. You always want to make sure you look at the little citation.
Well, to me, Wikipedia is a tool not for necessarily for getting information to transfer, but a tool for understanding of the subject or the topic that I'm
That's a much better way to put to understand it. I think it's also useful for when you do use the sources. If you don't necessarily use the Wikipedia article itself, but you just click on the little link that has the source, and then it can direct you to the source that they took that from. It's useful for that too. So,
and for those of you who don't know, Wikipedia is more or less it's a online dictionary, but it's more in depth to that. It has links that cross reference other topics that are similar or contained, but it's a great tool, Wikipedia, and I use it quite a bit. Let's see. Also, I learned something else this week. Did you know, and I've got to show, I know you'll be interested in this because you're a man of fashion just like me.
Correct.
I learned how to tie a regular necktie into a bow tie.
I always thought, like, if you wanted to tie a bow tie, you had to get one of those little smaller ones that you always see in, like, classy romantic comedies or whatever.
Yes.
Look, and they're in the general shape of the bow tie. So how did you do that?
One of my resources.
Wikipedia.
No, it actually wasn't Wikipedia. I'll tell you, I've always loved bow ties. I think they look classy, traditional. I was in a local thrift store, and I saw a small one. I thought, you know, I'm going to get that. If nothing else, I'm going to freak my wife out with it. You know, next time we go to church, I'm going to act like I'm putting it on. She'll look at me like, what are you doing, you know?
Social suicide.
Right,
it's a bow
exactly.
Tie.
Well, I wasn't going to really wear it, but I thought it'd make a good gag gift getting dressed for church or something. But anyway, I got the bow tie, and it was a little too small. The strap was a little too small around the neck. Of course, I've got the neck of a oversized turtle.
I think you and I both.
Yes.
You've got trunk.
I used to be a member of the no-neck club, but I've lost a lot of weight. I got kicked out of that club. So, but anyway, out of curiosity, I did a little research, and I'll tell you later where I found some information on this. And there's actually, I found two or three different ways to do this. So I tried it, and it worked. If you want to see a picture of me in my bow tie, there's one there at jasonkirtman.com. That's actually a necktie made into a bow tie. But it works. Again, I would like to say that if you'd like that CD, Johnny Lee Cook, Faith, Hope, and Laughter, give us a call at 575-437-0917. Let's play some songs. Let's play a little music right now. Here's Laverne Baker. You're going to like this. Laverne Baker, Ain't Gonna Cry No More, No More.
Everything
was Laverne Baker with Ain't Gonna Cry No More. How about a little bit of Today in History? Today is Record Store Day. Not sure exactly what that means, but I did get an email today from a local bookstore celebrating Record Store Day. Today is also, and I hope I pronounced this right, maybe you can correct me if you have a little bit more knowledge on this than I. Today is San Jacinto Day in Texas, the 175th anniversary of the day Texas won its independence from Mexico by defeating the army of General Santa Anna at San Jacinto. Interesting. Today's also Aggie Mustard Day, a day for current and former students of Texas A&M University to gather. They gather to honor Aggies who have died in the past year. The ceremony is celebrated at College Station, Texas, and at more than 400 other locations throughout the world. 100,000 Aggies are expected to muster.
That is a lot of Aggies.
That is a whole lot of Aggies. On this date in history, 1783, going back a little ways, Reginald Heber was born in England. He published his first hymn at age 28. His greatest hit, Holy, 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 usually found on page one in most hymn books. So that's interesting. I didn't know that. 1789, John Adams today was sworn in as the first Vice President of the United States. In 1940, the quiz show Take It or Leave It premiered on CBS Radio. It asked the $64 question. Speaking of game shows, in 1956, 10 years old, Leonard Ross won $100,000 on the TV show The Big Surprise by answering questions about the stock market. I couldn't answer any questions about the stock market.
I took an economics class in high school, and we ended up going to the Chicago Stock Exchange, which was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. It's just, there was just something about the energy there. Like it was kind of violent, but at the same time it was hopeful, and it was just this pit of passion, and it was simultaneously wonderful and awful to see at the same time. But I have never been able to understand stock market stuff. I have a hard time having a lot of faith in invisible money.
I can understand that, but I know that it's successful for some people too.
No, yeah, if you know what you're doing.
I would like to take a class on that.
I would too. I mean, it's if you know what you're doing. My dad is one of those people who can play the stock market. If you know what you're doing, you can do a pretty good job with it. But it's one of those things that if you're good at it, it has to consume your life.
Absolutely, absolutely. I remember this day in history, 1986, after a massive marketing and hoopla. I watched this. Reporter Geraldo Rivera hosted a live TV special to open a sealed vault linked to Al Capone in Chicago's Lexington Hotel. Do you remember hearing, or this was a big, big thing?
I actually don't. I will be honest, really, the most I know about Geraldo is that he has a fantastic mustache. That's about the extent
yes.
of my Geraldo.
Being a man of fashion,
exactly.
Yes, yes. He does. Giving credit where credit is due, Geraldo, if there's a top 10 mustache award, he'd be in there.
He'd be
absolutely
there.
But I remember this because it was like promoted for, it seemed like weeks. We're going to find out what's in Al Capone's vault, with sealed up in concrete. And I remember they had jackhammers and everything in between commercials. They talk about the history, and then they opened it up, and they found a couple of dusty beer bottles on the
floor.
That's
what I figured. I imagined, like, they opened it up, and it was just a vault of moonshine.
Yes. I remember Geraldo even saying at one point, maybe we'll find a vintage Rolls Royce in here.
Nope, just beer.
Nothing. It was just, aside from getting some education about Al Capone, and there wasn't really anything worth watching on that show.
Al Capone he disappoints us even after death.
Yes. Good history, though. I like watching movies from that time frame.
No, yeah, I do too. It's I don't know, the when they do those gangster movies that are set in that time period, I think those are my favorite. That setting is,
especially the ones that are based on true story.
True,
they're historically somewhat accurate.
Yeah, to the extent that it can be for.
Yes, I watched a good one on Netflix a couple of weeks ago. It was I don't remember the name of it exactly, but I think it was Gangland, I believe it was. But it was based on the life of Vern Miller, who was actually in law enforcement before he went to work for Al Capone. He was a sheriff, I believe, in off the top of my head, I'm wanting to say South Dakota. Turned criminal and died at a very young age, somewhere about 34 or 35 years old. Suffered from some diseases of the time. And interesting movie. It's a pretty interesting movie. Speaking of law enforcement, here in Wisconsin in 1993 on this date, two men were arrested for stealing a large electronic game machine from a bar. The machine was so heavy, their pickup truck got stuck in the mud in the tavern parking lot. One of the men had the nerve to call the sheriff's office and ask for a tow. So, excuse me. You know, as we go through life and have successes, sometimes we have to go through a lot of failures before we reach that big success, you know.
I think that's a life lesson everyone knows.
Thomas Edison, before he found the correct formula for the filament and the gas mixture for the light bulb, you know, he went through like 500,000 processes that didn't work. And somebody approached him and says, "You have not found how to invent the light bulb." He says, "No, but I have found 500,000 ways not to."
I love that quote. It's you know, being someone who wants to be a writer, I encounter the same thing trying to get stories published, and so that's a very good way to look at it. I've not failed to get a story published and get money off of it. I have, you know, just found a bunch of ways to write stories that nobody wants
that
to
won't
pay
get
for.
Published, right? I can understand that. This is interesting because this involves one of the biggest millionaires, trillionaires maybe, Bill Gates. 1998, I did not know this. This is so inspirational to me. Somebody else's failure. while Microsoft billionaire Bill Gates presented his new Windows 98 computer operating system to a Chicago convention group, it crashed. We have a word for that. We're in our circles. It's called epic failure.
Yes.
Yes.
Something that's actually just segueing back into Bill Gates, when he what he made his fortune on was when he pitched the Windows operating system to IBM for their new computer.
Yes.
When he actually pitched the idea, he did not have the operating system at the time, and he just purchased it from someone in Silicon Valley in California who was just made it in his garage. He just had a whole bunch of computers, and he just made it his own operating system in the garage, and then Bill Gates bought it and then sold it to IBM after he made his fortune.
Fascinating. Fascinating. That's smart. Here's something stupid for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
A group of Russian train conductors, this day in history, 2003, needed hospitalization after smashing their heads repeatedly against a train window for the sole purpose of finding out who had the strongest forehead. The conductors came up with a contest to pass time on a 3,000-mile journey from one town, which I cannot pronounce, Novosibirsk. Novosibirsk, yeah. That's as close as I'm going to get. It was in Siberia, to another town, which I'm not even going to try. The train had to stop so the conductors could receive medical attention.
I imagine the conversation that started that whole ordeal started with, "I will do this if you do this with me."
Or, "Hey, Boris, I got an idea." Right. Birthdays today. Queen Elizabeth II is 86 years old. Actress Andy McDowell, 54. Actress Paul LaPone, 63. Actor John Cameron Mitchell, 48. Comedian Nicole Sullivan, 42. And quarterback Tony Romo, 32. Before landing, here's trivia for you. Before landing a role in TV's Taxi in 1978, Tony Danza. You remember Tony Danza?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was a professional A, boxer, B, dancer, or C, bricklayer. Take a stab at it.
I want to say dancer sounds the most
likely. You're close.
Likely.
You're close. I see a lot of dancing in the boxing ring. He was a boxer. He was a boxer. And let's see, according to a study, all of U.S. welfare recipients, 66% have one thing in common. A, they drive Cadillacs, or C, they're too young to vote. Or B, they're too young to vote.
I had no clue.
They're too young to vote.
Too young to vote.
Yes, 60% of welfare recipients. Interesting. Take it for what it's worth. Final question. You suffer from rupophobia. R-U-P-O-P-H-O-B-I-A, rupophobia, rupophobia. Do you have an unnatural fear of A, Russian money, B, rainwater, or C, dirt?
I know I'm afraid of Rupel, so I would say Russian money.
I'm afraid of Russian money, too. But it is dirt.
It is dirt?
It is dirt.
That's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's play a song. Oh, you've got a joke for us. You said you had a joke for me.
I do have a joke. Okay. So Tom, Dick, and Harry are on vacation. The hotel that they're staying at has 600 floors. So they go out, they have a good night, they, you know, see a show, and then when they come back, they realize that the hotel elevator is broken, and so they have to walk all the way up to the 600th floor where their room is. And so they decide to make a deal. The first flight is, you know, the first 200 stairs, Tom will tell a joke. Second 200 stairs, Dick will sit, tell a happy memory, and then the last, you know, when they get to the top, then Harry will say a sad story. So 2 hours later, they get to the top, and then Harry says, "Okay, guys, here's a sad story for you. I left the keys on the bottom floor."
Epic failure.
Yeah, epic failure.
Epic failure. We're gonna play a song right now. I've got some friends that may be listening. Some friends that I met this week in San Antonio. I think they may be listening. I'm gonna play this because they requested me to play a little bit of my music. Here's a song that I wrote and recorded some years ago called "My Yoke Is Easy." A little bit of blues here for you, Derek.
I love blues.
Following Jesus is the life I chose. I'm putting my trust in Him, and I want the whole world to know it hasn't been easy. It ain't sugar and spice, but since I found the Lord, everything's turned out alright. 'Cause my yoke is easy, that's what He said. My burden's light, as the cross He gave to His children, for those that walk in. Things aren't so nice, but the yoke is easy and the burden is light. I've got troubles from time to time, but I got Jesus, so you know I really don't mind.
Taking a look at some strange news that's happened here recently. In Denver, a woman's been charged with perjury after a judge heard her admit on a local talk show on the radio that she had worn offbeat clothes and pretended to be mentally ill to get out of jury duty. Susan Cole, 57, was dismissed after showing up for jury selection in hair curlers, wearing mismatched shoes, reindeer socks, and a t-shirt reading, get this, "Ask me about my bestseller." You gotta give her credit for creativity. Cole, using a pseudonym, told of the ploy on a call to a radio station, saying she had been emotionally upset that morning and also had too much on her platter to serve on a jury. According to a court transcript of the jury selection, Cole was dismissed after telling the court she suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and gets very confused in the morning when she tries to get ready. Her makeup looked something like you would wear during a theater performance, one witness told the court reporter. She said in a statement to investigators, when the judge asked the entire panel if anyone had a mental illness, Cole stated that she had difficulties getting ready in the morning, which was apparent by the way she was dressed. Unfortunately for Cole, the judge, who had presided over court that day, heard the program and remembered the incident. She is now being charged. Here's another charge in the news of the weird. A Montana man has been charged with animal cruelty for allegedly getting his dog so drunk, not just a dog, but a Pomeranian, so drunk on vodka that the Pomeranian registered a blood alcohol level 4 times the legal limit for human drivers. The newspaper in Montana says that Todd Schreier, 49, was charged after police investigated a report of an intoxicated dog at a local tavern. The officers found Arlie the Second, that was the name of the Pomeranian, unable to walk a straight line without falling over. I have never seen a field sobriety tested on a on any dog.
While that's awful, that I have to admit there's some awful part in me that would have liked to see that happen. Even though it's an awful thing.
That's terrible, Derek.
It is terrible, but I mean, like, when you think about it...
You don't want to see it happen. You want to see the video.
That's what I mean. I don't want to be there when it happens, because then I would have to be the guy who says, okay, we can't...
But you are the guy that says, hey, is there a video of that?
Exactly.
Yes,
I
understand.
That's what YouTube is for, is to alleviate your guilt on these things.
Right. Officers reported that a drunk bar patron who claimed part ownership of Arlie Second said that Schreier had given the dog a to-go cup of vodka. A veterinarian found Arlie's blood alcohol level at 0.348. In Missouri, the legal limit. Most places, it's 0.08. And this is 0.348. 4 times over the limit for driving and almost at the level that is fatal to humans. The highest person I have ever conducted a breathalyzer test on registered at about 0.42. So 0.348 for a Pomeranian...
Well, I mean, it's based on their size, too. So, I mean, I don't think the Pomeranian
would have had to drink that much.
But,
right.
I mean, when you think about it, you know, the Pomeranian must have liked the vodka or else it would have stopped drinking it after a while.
I think that can be said for a lot of people who consume.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never tasted alcohol myself. Don't have any interest in it. That's just me and my family. But anyway, moving right along, speaking of vices, here's an interesting thought. What if, centuries ago, Sir Walter Raleigh was able to call England, the United Kingdom, on a telephone and say, hey, just found this great new stuff. I'm going to send you a shipment of it. It's called tobacco. Here's Bob Newhart talking about how that call might have gone.
Hello, who's calling? Sir Walter Raleigh from the colonies. Yeah, put him on, will you? Harry, you pick up your extension, will you? It's Nutty Walt again. Hi, Walt, baby. Good hearing your voice. Things are fine here, Walt. The boatload of turkeys you sent us over here last November, they're still here, Walt. Yeah, they're walking all over London. See, that isn't a holiday over here, Walt. Just in America. Yeah, you got another winner for us, Walt, have you? Tobacco. What's tobacco, Walt? A leaf. You've got 80 tons of it. You bought 80 tons of leaves, Walt? Oh, you're beautiful, Walt. Walt, I don't know if you noticed last time. We have plenty of leaves over here in England. See, come fall, we're up to... It's a special kind of leaf. It's some kind of food, is it, Walt? No, not exactly. What do you do with the leaves, Walt? Lots of different things. Are you saying snuff, Walt? And what's snuff? You take a pinch of tobacco and you stick it up your nose. And it makes you sneeze. I imagine it would, Walt, yeah. goes over very big there, does it? Yeah, goldenrod seems to do it over here, Walt. Tobacco has other uses. You can chew it or stuff it in a pipe. Or you can shred the leaves, put it in a little piece of paper, roll it up. You don't have to tell me, Walt. You stick it in your ear, right? Between your lips. Okay, Walt. And then what are you doing?
You set fire to it, Walt.
Hey, you want to get on the intercom? I don't want the boys to miss this.
You spilled your coffee. What's coffee, Walt? It's a drink you make out of beans. You roast them, and then you pour them in a cup. You drink it in the morning while you smoke your cigarette. I'm still here, Walt. I'm still here. Look, Walt, I'll tell you what you do. Put some of those on the boat. Yeah. If you can hook them with a burning leaf, I'm sure they'll go for the beans. What do you, Walt? Do me one favor, Walt. Don't call me anymore.
That was Dick Van Dyke talking about the United Kingdom's first introduction to tobacco and coffee. So that was interesting. Here's Elvis Presley from the I believe this is from the album Elvis Reloaded. Shopping Around. Here's Jerry Reed talking about trying to quit smoking. This is called Another Puff. Jerry Reed. You remember Jerry Reed?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I
I know there's a lot of talk going around today about cigarette smoking whittling your life away. I've seen it and I've heard it so many times that finally it just started to prey on my mind. I guess it scared me a little bit. That's why I decided I was going to quit. So while I was sitting here forming my battle plan, I took another puff and turned on the fan. I just sat down in my easy chair, thought of all the money I'd wasted on cigarettes all these years. I thought how I'd spend the rest of my days after I kicked this habit my body craved. Said to myself, this ain't gonna be so tough. With that little bit of insurance, I took another puff. I took a puff, a puff. Then I ripped off another puff. I decided I about had enough. That breaking this habit won't be too tough. Now I'll give a lot of thought to this thing. If I didn't smoke cigarettes, I'd feel just like a king. Besides, with the price going up every day, I knew I was just throwing all my good money away. You know, I ain't lit one an hour or so. Just wanted to make sure I could quit, you know. I was thinking maybe I want to write all this down, put it in a song, kind of circulate it around. Can't ever tell them I'd make a hit. That'd have to cause it a little bit. Can you imagine me, a hit songwriter? Where did I put that cigarette lighter? After all, it's a habit, and a habit you can break. Just a little bit of willpower, son, that's all it takes. Said to myself, you've got to be tough. And with that little bit of wisdom, I took another puff. I took a puff, and then a puff. And I finally ripped off another puff, and I decided, boy, this ain't gonna be tough. Besides, I just about had enough. I'm about ready to quit this rotten habit anyway. Oh, I think they ought to take it off television. It looks too good. Ow! I like them skinny ones with the filter. Oh, give it to me. Cigarette. I say, if I quit smoking, what'll I do? Maybe I'll eat. Yeah, I'll eat cigarettes. Oh, I love it. Chester B. don't smoke. He smokes logs. Makes you laugh funny, too. Oh, my throat's scratching. Oh. I wish I could think of something bad to say about cigarettes. Boo on cigarettes. Don't smoke. You quit smoking, that'd leave more for me. I love it. No, I don't love cigarettes. You know, don't misunderstand me. I hate cigarettes. Makes you cough. And when you don't smoke, it makes you shake. I don't know what's worse, to shake or to cough. I think it'll make me a cough shake. Oh! Son, did you ever smoke? Oh, I remember one time I quit smoking. I quit for 3 months. My wife left me. So did my children. She took my house and left. It was a mobile home.
I don't think he really wanted to quit.
I think he was making excuses.
Yes, I believe so. Here's Walter Brennan. We played some Walter Brennan when I first started the show. You can't go wrong with some good old-fashioned Walter Brennan ballads. Here's Back to the Farm with Walter Brennan.
I don't care for city life. Move to town just to please my wife. Ain't allowed to whittle with my pocket knife. I want to go back to the farm. Can't wear overalls no more. Silly carpets all over the floor. Miss the boys at the general store. I want to go back to the farm. Sure miss fishing in old Mud Creek. Neighbors ain't friendly. They won't speak. Gotta take a bath at least once a week. Never had to do that in the farm. My, what I do to please a spouse. I was a man. Now I feel like a mouse. bathroom built right inside the house. Ain't like it was in the farm. Fancy restaurants, neon lights, women walking round and tight. I even miss the chigabites I used to get in the farm. Supposed to be a life of ease. Well, guess I'm just a little hard to please. Mama don't fix them black-eyed peas like she done back in the farm. My, that wife of mine's a sight. Where's that girdle? Too darn tight. Gonna learn to play bridge tonight. She weren't like that on the farm. Don't get milk from cows no more. Comes in a bottle, right to the door. You know, I ain't had a good saddle sore since I left my home on the farm. I'm a little older, but a whole lot wiser. My wife calls me a cheap old miser. Miss that smell of fertilizer that we had back on the farm. She just jabbers on the phone, talking about what the neighbors own. She's going to find herself alone, because I'm heading back for the farm.
Now, class, today we're going to talk about Cleopatra, Queen of the Nile. Now, I know how you've all heard how she was a beautiful woman. Well, now, she wasn't a beautiful woman. She wasn't a beautiful woman at all. I mean, she is all right. But she wasn't beautiful. Now, you're going to ask me, if she wasn't beautiful, how come Julius Caesar and Mark Antony and everybody went so crazy over her? Well, you'll have to remember that Julius Caesar and Mark Antony were soldiers and overseas. Now, how Julius Caesar met her, he used to go down to Egypt every 4th of July. See, and he was down there spending the holidays. And he is just sitting around in his tent one night by himself, lonely, reading prescriptions. And she come walking in, and he was so struck by her that he just got up and give her his seat. And he says, ars mutatis longa vita mutandis brevis. And that means, as sure as a vine twines around the stump, you are my darling sugar lump. Even in high school, he is good at verses. And anyhow, they got to fooling around after supper. And he asked her to marry him. And they did. They got married, and he took her on back to Rome, and everybody got mad at him for marrying her. The senators there in Rome, they finally got so mad at him that they killed him. They caught him in an alley one night and stabbed him right in his toga. And that's when Caesar said that famous line, just as he was dying, that famous line you might remember, he said to Brutus, he says, et tu, Brute? And Brutus says, yeah, me too. Now, it happened, there was this fella, Mark Antony, that was living there at that time, and he was an old army buddy of Julius Caesar's, and he was a pretty big man with the civil service. Now, he killed all the senators, and it happened, you know, to get revenge, and it happened that he was going to go down to Egypt anyhow, and while he was there, he thought he'd just stop in on Cleopatra. And he told her how he had killed all the senators, and she said how much she appreciated it. And they got to liking one another, and first thing you know, there's dating. There's riding around on camels and sailing around on her barge and fooling around back of the pyramid. Fact, I appreciate it. Somebody wrote on one of the pyramid walls, Antony loves Cleopatra. It was right next to where somebody else wrote, Pharaoh was here. And everything was going good for him. Everything was going real good. But Mark Anthony had a wife in Rome, and she wouldn't give him a divorce. And it happened that her brother had just been elected emperor of Rome. And he come in one day, and he says, "Sister," he says, "you know what I'm going to do?" She says, "What?" He says, "I'm going down there and declare war on Mark Anthony and Cleopatra." And she says, "Would you?" And he did. He went down there and was just a-whooping the fire out of him. There's dead Egyptians laying everywhere. The streets was full, tombs was full, and he run all over Egypt looking for somebody to run him through with his sword, and everybody looked at him like he was a nut, and he was peculiar. And couldn't find anybody to do it, so he run himself through, and he expired. And Cleopatra, she heard of it, and she had this snake, just a little old bitty thing, but poison. And that thing bit her, and her maid run in, her handmaiden, and says, "Mistress, mistress, what happened?" And she says, "Snake bite." And she says, "Well, what you do, you cut it where it bit you and suck it." She says, "No, I meant to." And she says, "Why, old mistress, why?" And she says, "In articulo mortis." Now, that's that famous saying. In articulo mortis. And children, I hope all of you remember what that means, because I certainly don't.
Here's a little bit of Ray Stevens with "Have a Little Talk with Myself."
Lately, I have noticed all my friends avoiding me, and that girl who loves me up and said goodbye. My whole world is coming apart and falling in on me, and I guess deep down I know the reason why. Lately, I've been living for nobody else but me, letting my selfish ego take command. Lately, I've been giving in to pride and vanity, and I guess I let it get the upper hand. And I think it's just about time to have a little talk with myself.
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 A little private conversation, a little self-examination, a little attitude correction, a little soul-searching inspection. Start heading in the right direction. Take a little walk.
Take a little walk.
Have a little talk with myself. I put importance on the wrong things in this life, and my outlook had a twisted point of view. But all you reap with vanity is a heartache and strife. Without love and friendship, you can't make it through. And I think it's just about time to have a little talk with myself.
Have a little talk with myself.
Have a little talk with myself. A little private conversation, a little self-examination, a little attitude correction, a little soul-searching inspection. Start heading in the right direction. Analyze it, recognize it, itemize it, criticize it, realize, organize it, summarize it, ostracize it. Take a little walk.
Take a little walk.
Have a little talk with myself. Have a little talk with myself.
Have a little talk with myself.
Have a little talk with myself. A little private conversation.
That is the great Ray Stevens sending us a message talking about thinking about what we need to change in our life. I would like to say that this broadcast is brought to you in full stereo for the benefit of our listeners who do have two ears. A little cornball humor there. Here's another track, "Where Could I Go?" This is from yours truly.
this old silver worm. Hardly a comfort can afford. Striving alone to face temptation sore. Where could I go but to the Lord? Where could I go? Tell me, where could I go? Seeking a refuge for my soul.
For my soul, I've been
needing a friend to save me in the end. Life here is grand with friends I love so dear. Comfort I get from God's own word. Yet when I face that chilly hand of death, where could I go but to the Lord?
Where could I go?
Tell me,
where could I go?
Seeking a refuge for my soul.
For my soul, well, I've been
needing a friend to save me in the end.
We played Have a Little Talk with Myself a while ago by Ray Stevens. You told me during the song that you're not familiar with Ray Stevens. Is that correct?
No, I'll be honest. This is the first time that I have heard Ray Stevens, but what I did hear, I really appreciated. I really like that.
Yeah, well, Ray Stevens is a very versatile artist. On that track, all of the background vocals he did himself. Ray Stevens is not known for his serious gospel message music. He's known for being a comedian. He had his own theater in Branson for years, and just an absolutely hilarious guy. One of my favorite songs that he did years ago, and I wasn't going to play this, but since you're not familiar with Ray Stevens, we're getting ready to close out the show. We're going to play this real quick, and then we'll come back. This is called Harry the Hairy Ape.
Well, a strange thing happened the other night. You won't believe it, but I swear it's true. Harry the hairy ape made his escape from the city zoo. And under cover of darkness, he made his way to the middle of the municipal park and hid in the bushes and waited for somebody to come walking along by himself in the dark. Then along comes somebody not suspecting nothing. Harry jumped out of the bushes all of a sudden, beat on his chest, jump up and down, and he say, which is hey, talk for boo, I bet you I scared you, ha ha. Skidded poke cats as bad as eyes, bug got his hair turned white, he run off through the municipal park, screaming and hollering, cleaning up the lawn, tearing up the shrubbery, knocked down the keeper, the grass side, run through the hurricane fence, fell in the municipal swimming pool and drowned himself. Well, Harry thought this was the funniest thing that he had ever seen. He laughed, jumped back in the bushes, got ready to do it again. The next guy that come along was the nearsighted local DJ, just bopping down the sidewalk on his way to work with a box of records on his arm that he was gonna play. So here come, not suspecting nothing, Harry jumped out the bushes all of a sudden, beat on his chest, jump up and down, and he say, which is Harry Topper, smile you on candy cows. Man, that DJ was so nearsighted, he thought Harry was a rock and roll singer. So he gave him an old glad hand, smile, slapped him on the back, say, don't worry, baby, I'm gonna play the record, cause you too cool, too cool, too cool. Then he slid by, bopped on off down the sidewalk. Every 4 or 5 steps, he stopped and turned around, do a little boogaloo shingling. Well, this really shook Harry up. I mean, it blew his whole bit, you know, ruined his whole day. So he run back to his cage fast he could go, jump up on his little swing, put both hands over his eyes and didn't look for 3 hours and 45 minutes. But that's not the end of the story. Here's what happened. When the DJ played Harry's record, he became a star. Got him some tight britches, got him a manager, went on a promotion tour, combed his hair back, took up playing the guitar. And every Sunday afternoon you can go and see Harry at the zoo. And the girls will scream, and he'll sit on his swing and he can sing his hit record for you.
Well, that was Harry the Hairy Ape with Ray Stevens, and he's quite the entertainer. It is time for us to head out for the evening. Trying to get my computer to work here. It's not working. Not sure why. I'll fix that later. Anyway, it's time for us to close. I will close out with a different song this week. We're going to play Glory Land by the Imperials. Oh, there it is. Never mind. There's Hawaii Five-O. Well, I guess I will see you later on this week, Derek.
As always.
As always, yes. I'm getting ready. I'll be getting up early to go about my make my appointed rounds, as I say. It is 6:59. We will return to our regular scheduled program. I do thank you for listening to the Jason Kirkman Show. It's been a blast having my guest and my friend, Derek Heise, in the studio with us. And hopefully, he is getting ready to make a change in his life. He may not be in the area too much longer, but we'll see. And if not, we will certainly miss him. Might have to make one of those Skype calls to you one evening.
Worst case scenario, I can always come down and help you out with the show.
Hey, that'd be great. That would be great. We'll have to go eat sushi together.
Yes, we will.
We are returning to our regular scheduled program. Thanks for listening, and have a fantastic, great evening.